is Saturday. It is November 11th, 2017. This is Spingola Speaks, and this is Deanna Spingola, and I'm broadcasting from the Chicago suburbs. Thanks for joining me today at republicbroadcasting.org. Please also visit and subscribe to spingolaspeaks.net and woolliesblog.blogspot.com and screeningsandyhook.net. During the program, email questions or comments to comment@spingola.email. Do not send questions to my regular email, as I do not view them during the program. Please visit the chat room at spingola.chatango.com. You may view our guest lineup at spingola.com. In addition to the links for each guest, I also provide other interesting links relative to the guest and his or her subject. We probably won't take calls until, well, we'll see how it goes, but probably not. Anyway, the Mormon Church claims to have no paid ministry. However, during the 1970s and 1980s, each new member of the Quorum of the Twelve received $1 million. That gift might be substantially higher today. Mission presidents also receive financial support, housing, and all expenses, as do temple presidents who are called out of their usual place of residence. One may also apply that to other high officials. My guest today, and this is going to be relevant, as we shall see, my guest today for the first 2 hours is Mike Norton, N-O-R-T-O-N. He is also known as New Name Noah. He has a YouTube, and you may find that by just typing in New Name Noah YouTube. Now, Mike did an interview on Heart of the Matter, which I've linked on the schedule page, and that was published on October 26, 2017. He's also done an interview with Mormon Stories. I first became aware of Mike when he did a series of videos, which, to an outsider, one might not understand the scope of what he was doing. So today we're going to find out what he's doing, what he's done, and just a bit about his experiences. Mike, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Deanna.
Well, it's just great having you on the program. And I've listened to those interviews, and they were very emotional. I could really relate to it. As you know, I used to be a Mormon, and I think former Mormons go through periods of anger and remorse and all kinds of feelings, because nobody likes to be fooled, and certainly there are ways that we can spring back or counteract some of what our experiences have been. And anyway, you grew up in the church, correct?
That is correct. I was born and raised in the church, born in the late 1960s, baptized in the 70s, and went on a mission for the church in the 1980s.
Right. And now, tell us a little bit about a mission. Who pays your expenses? Now, we know that the upper echelon of the church, the hierarchy, they're pretty well taken care of. Did they pay for your mission? Did the church pay for your mission?
They did not. For the most part, I paid for probably half of my mission, and a woman by the name of Roxy Marshall, who was like a grandmother to me, paid for the other half.
Okay, but the point I'm trying to make, I suppose, is that the missionaries, or their families or friends, pay for all of the expenses of that mission. The church does not pay.
That is true.
And
yeah,
in addition,
very few exceptions, people pay for the church, pay for their mission themselves. Yeah.
And really, a missionary, I usually now refer to them as the marketers of the church. They go out and they find people to baptize, to bring into the church, They pay their expenses, or the family pays their expenses, and that is in addition to the family also. The family is also expected to pay 10% tithing, and that is on their gross income.
Yeah, yeah. Not only are our families, in many cases, paying for the cost of their son or daughter to go on a mission, but they are also required to continue giving 10% of their income to the church on top of paying for the mission itself.
Yes, and that's what we did. My son went on a mission, and we thought it was just a wonderful thing. And now I look back, and he had some experiences in his mission that were sort of eye-opening. But tell us about your mission. You went to California, back to pretty much close to where you were, where you grew up, correct?
That is correct. I most grew up in San Joaquin Valley, in a little town called Visalia between Bakersfield and Fresno. Moved to Colorado for a bit and then to Utah, and then I wound up going on a mission. And when I went on a mission, I was actually called to the California Ventura Mission, which covered at the time, this is 1987, a rather wide swath of California that covered, included most of the San Fernando Valley. It went up to San Luis Obispo, and it went out to Bakersfield. And so kind of a triangular-shaped chunk of Southern California. And Bakersfield was my very first area. So my first area was, I don't know how far Bakersfield is from Visalia, but I think it's about an hour's drive away or so. Visalia was actually out of my mission boundaries, but my first area was fairly close.
And you had some very interesting experiences, and you implemented some methods that I've never heard of before. But I think, except in the early church, when missionaries used to preach to whole congregations, and that's what you did, which is amazing to me. And as I was listening to your other interviews, that is really nice. That is really good. That is an aggressive but a really, I think, effective way of teaching, or at least attempting to market the word.
Yeah, well, keep in mind too, this is my mission was 1987 to 89, and for all intents and purposes, the internet really didn't exist yet, and so.
Oh no.
Back then, if somebody had so-called anti-Mormon material, it was typically a book or a pamphlet that they either was given to them, or somebody had purchased at a Christian bookstore or something or another and had given it to them. And so a vast majority of people back in the late 80s either didn't know anything about Mormonism, or what they did know was relatively limited. It wasn't uncommon back then. In fact, it still isn't. If you ask somebody what's the first thing that comes to mind when you hear Mormon or Mormonism, they think polygamy. They often confuse Mormons with the Amish, where sometimes they'll think that they're the ones that drive around in little buggies with the horse-drawn buggies, and they wear black, right? So I thought, as a missionary, that it wasn't uncommon for so-called Christian churches to actually openly discuss Mormonism, and sometimes you'd actually have the minister would actually invite a speaker, somebody like Ed Decker or Walter Martin, the Bible Answer Man, to come to their church and to teach their congregation. In some cases, there'd be thousands of people. Teach your congregation what Mormons believe. And I felt at the time, as a Mormon missionary, that the information that was getting out wasn't entirely accurate. In some cases, I felt it was blatantly false. Take, for example, a perfect example, the Godmakers. There was a book out, and there was a movie as well, called The God Makers. And in my opinion, then and now, I thought the book was trash. Poorly written. It was poorly researched. And my opinion was that it painted Mormons out to literally be Satan worshipers. It was just absolutely ridiculous. And so I thought, to counteract this, starting my very first area, I would take my companion, my mission companion. You always had your companion with you 24 hours a day, essentially, except for, you know, when you're in the shower, you could have the bathroom door closed, but that was about it. I would take my companions that usually you would have anywhere from a month to 3 months, on average. Usually it's probably about 2 months. We would go to the local Christian, or non-denominational Christian churches. Oftentimes you go to Baptist churches because it seemed like they're the ones that really were spearheading the anti-Mormonism attitude sometimes. So we would go to their churches and just ask them point blank, can we teach your congregation what Mormons believe? We know that sometimes ministers like to teach your congregations what Mormons believe, but sometimes you guys really don't get the facts straight. So could we teach your congregation what we believe? I just kind of felt like the original early apostles for the Mormon church back in the 1800s, they would go off to England on missions to England. Specifically, I remember there was a partnership of Parley P. Pratt and Heber C. Kimball, were early Mormon leaders who went on a mission to England, and they would literally teach and in some cases baptize almost entire congregations. And so I figured, if they can do it back in the 1800s, why can't we do it now?
And I think that's wonderful that you were so innovative and that you decided, hey, let's do this. Let's try this out. But what did you do to prepare yourself? You acted like the alternate lawyer who always prepares the case for the other side so that he knows exactly what he's dealing with. And so what did you do to prepare yourself for doing this, for teaching this Baptist congregation?
This is kind of a precursor to what I would eventually do in 2016, but kind of the opposite. This is 1987, as a Mormon missionary, I wanted to get my hands on all of the current up-to-date so-called anti-Mormon material, but I didn't want to have to pay for it and actually financially support these people that I thought were enemies of the church. So I made some phone calls. I got a hold of Sandra Tanner, Gerald and Sandra Tanner at the Utah Lighthouse Ministry in Utah. Their website is utlm.org. And the Tanners were just a wealth of information. And essentially the spiel I gave was I told them that I gave them my real name, but I told them that I was investigating the church, considering joining the Mormon church, and want to know if they had any information they could share with me that might help persuade me otherwise. I mean, if the church isn't true, I wanted to know it. And so it started with Sandra and Gerald Tanner, where they wound up sending me a couple of books, and they also gave me phone numbers for really all of the other big so-called anti-Mormons. Yeah, they gave me phone numbers for Ed Decker and Dick Baer and Chuck and Dolly Sackett and Walter Martin. And I just started making phone calls to these people. In fact, quite a few of these phone calls I actually recorded, and I'm 99% sure I still have the audio tapes of these conversations.
Michael,
I would call them.
Yeah. Let me just interject something here. The Mormon Church absolutely discourages its members from seeking information outside of what they have prepared. In fact, the Tanners, we always heard about the Tanners. Oh my gosh, they're evil, they're terrible. Do not listen to anything they say. And being obedience trained, which all Mormons are obedience trained from the time that they're born till the time that they die, to listen to the authorities and to never question. And so you were going kind of outside of what we had been taught by actually reading that evil stuff that the Tanners put out, which is really very good. So go ahead, continue. I didn't mean to.
I didn't. In fact, I actually, I wound up getting in trouble for this because you're right. For a missionary to be making numerous phone calls to the mean old anti-Mormons and acquiring all this anti-Mormon material, I was very clearly in violation of the mission rules. What I was doing was outside the norm of acceptable behavior.
For every Mormon, not just for missionaries.
Oh, yeah.
For
absolutely.
Every Mormon. Oh, my goodness. If you got caught reading something like that, well, phew, what kind of a person were you? So we were all obedience trained. So,
well, my attitude was I felt like the so-called anti-Mormons were the enemy, and they were the ones that were, in some cases, leading people that I was trying to teach and bring into the church. They would sometimes, or their material at least, would sometimes lead them away, and people would wind up not joining the church because of something they had read. And so
sure.
I became
it
very
was logical.
Well-versed in anti-Mormon literature. So, in fact, I actually became somewhat of an apologist on my mission to the point where it was not uncommon for me to get phone calls from other missionaries in the mission with a tough question that somebody gave them. Somebody would call and they'd be like, hey, Elder Norton, I have an investigator and he said that Joseph Smith said there's men living on the moon and they're dressed like Quakers. But he didn't really say that, right? And so
yeah.
I would have to explain to them, well, no, actually, he did say that. And then I would give the rationalization as to why Joseph Smith said that and try to help them. I'd put it into perspective and put it in the context and help them understand why he would say that and why that doesn't mean that he's not a prophet. And then they would go back to their investigator and give them their answer. And I got pretty good at it. I mean, I was a very good little apologist for the church. But yeah, what happened was Dick Baer, who I believe is passed away now. Dick Baer, I believe he was one of the either co-writers or producers of The God Makers. And he was a well-known anti-Mormon. I always say anti-Mormon with like air quotes because, I mean, the fact of the matter is you could take some random talks from Brigham Young from the 1840s or 50s or 60s or 70s. You can take some random Brigham Young talks and just quote Brigham Young directly, and 9 out of 10 Mormons would say, oh, that's anti-Mormon. It's like, well, wait a second. Okay, I'm literally quoting Brigham Young. And essentially their attitude is, unless it is faith-promoting, it's anti-Mormon. So by that logic, really any encyclopedia set is anti-Mormon because the encyclopedia doesn't support the ridiculous belief that Native Americans were descendants of Jewish immigrants who sailed across the seas and rode around the plains in horse-drawn chariots 2,000 years ago. I mean, some of the beliefs of Mormonism are so absolutely ridiculously laughable, I don't even know where to begin. I mean, they believe that the Garden of Eden, the cradle of humanity, is located in Jackson County, Missouri. That's where life began on Earth, Jackson County, Missouri.
Oh, okay. We do have a 3-minute break. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
For the past 14 years, it's been my privilege to host the National Intel Report on RBN, to offer a platform to interview exceptional guests, to provoke critical thought, and examine evidence, whether real, fake, or somewhere in between, and allow our audience to call in and participate with your input and questions, in order to help us all reach an educated decision and arrive at our own truth. Our world has changed. It's now been turned on its head. Real is now considered fake, and mainstream fake is now pushed as real, rather than any clear thinking, consensus, or rationale.
Those few remaining beacons of light, the ones still shining through the mainstream media lies, propaganda, and deception, are being viciously attacked at every level through attempts at censorship, threatening advertisers, jailing hosts, and even killing journalists brave enough to speak the truth to you. We are in a war for our very freedom and existence, and through these despicable acts, freedom haters, collectivists, and communitarians have shown they will stop at nothing to blot out these last few beacons of light. Truth is becoming increasingly more difficult to unmask, just as the term unmasking itself is spoken by those usually anonymous sources. They promote their lies, wishing to mask the truths by ignoring it, vilifying it, or conspiratorializing it into a black hole abyss.
Regrettably, RBN has reached the tipping point, and through internal audit and actuarial review, it has now been determined that the only life raft of survival to this network is to go the way of PBS, that being audience-supported. Like a cornered animal, the left with veracity is pulling out all the stops with every effort to effectively blacken our beacon forever. Help us, folks. Help yourselves. Don't let our light stop shining. Our motto has always been, because you can handle the truth. It's time to review your budget, folks. If you want the truth to keep flowing through RBN, go to republicbroadcasting.org and become a regular monthly donor of 30, 40, 50, or 100 or more a month and ensure you keep the truth flowing.
We are the American Freedom Party. This is the most urgent time in the history of Western civilization. In the year 1900, white people of European descent comprised 35% of the world population. Today it is less than 9% and falling fast. Europe is being overrun with Middle Eastern immigrants, and America's founding stock is rapidly being replaced with third world peoples from around the globe. For the last 50 years, every influential institution in this nation, our schools and universities, our media, our churches and our employers, have promoted policies and principles that teach whites to be ashamed of their great heritage and birthright. We, who in the 1950s, the 1960s, and 1970s were the world's dominant force, are now so afraid of being called racist that we were quailing towards irrelevance and extinction. Join the American Freedom Party today. Reach us at theamericanfreedomparty.us or call us at 701-317-5317. Paid for by the American Freedom Party.
All righty. Welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest today for the first 2 hours is Mike Norton, also known as New Name Noah. He does have a YouTube channel. Just search for New Name Noah YouTube. Now, you were talking about the lack of DNA evidence to support the theory that the American Indian was descended from a small group of people who left Jerusalem and somehow, well, there was actually two groups, but we're talking about the later group who left Jerusalem and came over here, somehow managed to come over here, build a ship, come over here, and from that very, very small group became millions and millions of people who created chariots, and they had steel bows, they had steel, supposedly, they had all of these wars, and there's not one single archaeological piece of evidence to support that theory. No wheels, well, there's nothing, nothing.
There's nothing. In fact, and you know, the although Mormons like to essentially say, well, we really don't know where these people died or where they lived. I mean, we just know they were somewhere in the Americas. And there's been numerous attempts by Mormon apologists over the years to try and pinpoint where these people mentioned in the Book of Mormon actually lived. Joseph Smith and numerous so-called prophets, seers, and revelators over the years have been very, very specific about where some very specific events mentioned in the Book of Mormon took place. For example, there is a hill mentioned in the Book of Mormon, in the Book of Ether, ironically, because it'll put you to sleep. in the Book of Mormon, it tells the story of a group of people called Jaredites. And if memory serves me correctly, they came from the Tower of Babel. It was around that time. I believe it was around, 4600 BC. It could be, I'm going to say 4600. I'm drawing a blank on that date right now. But thousands of years before Christ, these people supposedly prayed and asked God if he would not confound their tongues and language so they could be together and just leave this whole Tower of Babel nonsense behind them. And they prayed, and God allegedly led them to build what is basically described as submarines. They built submarines, essentially, and they sailed across the ocean to the Americas.
With all these animals and bees and elephants and
honeybees and now some people might say, well,
and with all the food.
Well, yeah. Oh, all the food and yeah, it's just ridiculous. But those people, those Jaredites, eventually they grew into millions of people, and eventually they had a giant battle at a hill that they called Ramah. R-A-M-A-H, Rama. And the Book of Mormon says that nearly 2 millions, that's a direct quote, nearly 2 millions of them died fighting in a massive battle or battles at this hill called Rama. Well, the hill called Rama was later referred to as Cumorah by the Nephites and Lamanites. And later, about 1,000 years later, around 420 A.D., we are told that a massive battle took place at this hill, Cumorah, formerly known as Rama. And Joseph Smith and numerous other church leaders over the years have pinpointed the exact location of this hill, Cumorah. And it was the Cumorah that Mormons are familiar with. That every year they have this hill Cumorah pageant. Yeah. And it's also the same hill where Joseph Smith claims that he was led to a set of gold plates that were buried in this hill, and he translated these plates and turned it into the Book of Mormon.
But he never looked at them when he was translating them.
Well, yeah, they didn't need to be in the room at the time. He just looked at his peepstone and his hat. There's a problem with this. So in the Book of Mormon,
Mike, we do have a quick 3-minute break. We'll pick this up on the other side. All righty.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Do you know there is an ongoing war right here in America? Are you aware that U.S. citizens have been classified as enemies of the state since 1933? Have you recognized that our entire government is really a vast network of interlocking corporations engaged in commerce? Look up Title 28, Section 3002. Tune in to In Defense of Humanity on Saturday nights at 7 p.m. Central Time. Find out what's really going on. And learn how to protect yourself and your family as flesh and blood men and women living in a corporate reality.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll-free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Extendivite is more than just a heart tonic. Most basic diseases are caused by yeast in the gut and metals in the liver, and we all have a bit of both. The garlic in Extendivite has a yeast-killing effect in the gut while also helping the sulfur enzyme in the liver get rid of the metals. Extendivite just may improve your overall health. Products like Extendivite are the only way we are going to get our society healthy. And if you're waiting for the government and pharmaceutical care to solve your health problems, you're going to have a long, disappointing wait, I think. Extendivite is a complete formula for extended life in the new millennium. 80 can be the new 60. Extendivite is available in capsule or liquid form for just $69.95 for a two-month supply. To get started, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AirOutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AirOutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more, plus Magpul clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AirOutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AirOutfitting.com.
Welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest the first 2 hours today is Mike Norton. And we were talking about having to take all that food in these 8 submarines, so that they called them a dish, and they turned upside down, and there was a cork in the top, I could just imagine what a mess it would have been to have all these animals. It was impossible, and all 8 of these contraptions landed at the same place at the same time. Now that's a miracle.
Well, I mean, because they were led by God, of course. In fact, my favorite part is some people might say, well, wait a second. These are ancient wooden submarines that were made thousands of years before Christ. How did they see? What was their light source inside these submarines? Well, there was a man by the name of Mahanri Moriankamer, Mormons believe, who gathered some rocks, and because he had so much faith, he prayed and he asked God to literally touch these rocks with his hand, with his finger, make them glow, and then he would put a glowing rock on each side of the submarine inside so they could see. So he prayed, and the premortal finger of Jesus Christ reached out of the heavens and touched these rocks and actually caused them to glow, and glow apparently for months and months as they illuminated the inside of these submarines. So, you know, they land in the Americas, they populate the Americas, millions of them, at least, you know, about 2 million, according to the Book of Mormon, fought in battle around 600 BC at the Hill Cumorah in upstate New York. 1,000 years later, about 420 AD, you've got another, according to the numbers given, another 230,000 Nephites who were a different group of Jewish immigrants that populated the Americas. They also died in a massive battle at the same hill where the nearly 2 million Jaredites died. So you have a hill in upstate New York, Mormons believe, over the span of about 1,000 years, two massive battles took place in which over 2.2 million people died using steel weapons and armor. Now, to put that into perspective, the Battle of Gettysburg, there was a total of about just over 7,000 deaths at Gettysburg. And if you were to go to Gettysburg today and just start digging, which is illegal, by the way, and you shouldn't do it, but if you did, you would have trouble turning more than a few shovels full of dirt before you would find evidence of a massive battle that took place there in the 1860s. And yet, the Book of Mormon has 2.2 million people dying at and around this Hill Cumorah in upstate New York. They've done excavating there because, you know, well, first of all, in the 1830s, when Joseph Smith claimed that he found gold plates there, needless to say, people started digging around the hill, seeing if they could find some gold there as well. But the church has also built a temple there, and they've turned the area into a tourist attraction, essentially, for Mormons. But yet, there's never been any evidence found of massive battles. It's not some kind of World Heritage site where historians, legitimate historians, have actually pinpointed, holy cow, we don't know what happened here, but we do know that a lot of people died here. That kind of evidence doesn't just disappear in the span of 1,000 years or 2,000 years, but yet Mormons seem to think that it does. At one point, Joseph Smith, when he was still alive, was walking around through Jackson County, Missouri. He stumbled across the bones of a man who was literally laying on the surface of the earth, and Joseph Smith proclaimed that this man, this body, belonged to that of a great white Lamanite warrior named Zelph. So apparently Joseph Smith is stumbling across bodies on the surface of the earth, but yet 2.2 million people die using steel weapons and armor at the Hill Cumorah, and there's zero archaeological evidence to support it. It's ridiculous.
It is. Speaking of other ridiculous things, could you address the Book of Abraham?
Oh, good Lord. go back to 1838. Keep in mind that Joseph Smith lived in a time where, he claimed he was a prophet of God. He translated the gold plates into the Book of Mormon. But back then, Mormons had kind of this, you know, what have you done for us lately attitude. And so he had an opportunity. In 1838, there was a gentleman by the name of Michael Chandler passing through Kirtland, Ohio, where all the Mormons had assembled and were living. And Mr. Chandler had a traveling mummy exhibit with Egyptian hieroglyphics written on papyrus, and he had like five mummies, and you know, people had never seen anything like this before. People would pay like 50 cents to go inside the tent and actually look at real Egyptian mummies and Egyptian papyrus with hieroglyphics. But they weren't really able to translate hieroglyphics at the time. The Rosetta Stone was found in 1799, and by 1838, there was just a tiny, tiny handful of people in the world that were just mastering the ability to translate Egyptian hieroglyphics. So when this traveling mummy exhibit comes through town, of course, somebody asks Mr. Chandler, well, what do these scrolls say? What do those hieroglyphics say? And he said, we don't know. Nobody knows. And somebody, of course, said, well, you know who could translate that? the prophet Joseph Smith. So, naturally, Joseph Smith is drawn to the display. And Joseph takes one look at one of these rolls of papyrus, and he says, essentially, whoa, holy cow, do you realize what that is? This is the handwritten journal of the prophet Abraham, as in the biblical prophet Abraham. We're talking Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. We're talking about the man literally every Christian, Muslim, and Jew in the world believes to be a prophet of God. And Joseph Smith just happens to have this guy's personal handwritten journal traveling through town. Well, needless to say, the Mormons were excited. Oh, we've got to buy this. We have to buy this. So they saved up all their money and scraped and did fundraisers and everything, and they raised, I don't recall the exact amount. I think it was around $2,500, which was an extraordinary amount of money at the time, because Mr. Chandler said, I'm not going to just sell the papyrus. You've got to buy the whole thing, mummies and all, everything. It's either buy everything or buy nothing. So they bought everything. One of the other scrolls of papyrus that he had in his little exhibit was none other than the handwritten journal of Joseph, who was sold into Egypt, which most people might recognize as, you know, Joseph, the guy with the amazing Technicolor dream coat. Now, the funny thing, the church still has the papyrus. Now, so Joseph Smith translated. He took his sweet time, literally years. So when people would basically say, what have you done for us lately? He could say, you know, don't you understand that I'm translating? And he translates this papyrus that he claimed was written by the hand of Abraham into what is known as the Book of Abraham, which is part of Mormon scripture in a book they call the Pearl of Great Price. But Joseph Smith was killed in the early 1840s. He never finished translating the other scroll, which had the writings of Joseph, who was sold into Egypt. And the papyrus is actually lost. They thought for years it was lost and burned in the Great Chicago Fire. But it turns out they weren't. And they resurfaced in the 1960s to a lot of hoopla and all that. And of course, Egyptologists and experts in Egyptology studied the papyrus. And they all came to the same conclusion. Joseph Smith was completely full of crap. His translation of this papyrus turns out, it wasn't written by the hand of Abraham. It was literally about 2,000 years too new to have been written on by the hand of Abraham. And it really had nothing to do with Abraham at all. It was a very common funeral prayer referred to as the Book of Breathings or Book of the Dead. And it was made specifically for the man that was buried with the scroll. His name was, it was spelled H-O-R, pronounced whore. So, but the funny thing is that some of the hieroglyphics from this papyrus, from this scroll, are actually still in their book of scripture called the Pearl of Great Price. So, and Joseph Smith's translation of these hieroglyphs is still in there as well. So it's just absolutely ridiculous, because since like the 1850s, essentially, there's been people throughout the earth. Now there's probably hundreds, if not thousands, of people in the world that can translate Egyptian hieroglyphics, and not a single solitary one of them has ever said that Joseph Smith's translation of the hieroglyphics was even remotely close to being accurate. I mean, not only was it not accurate, it was about as far from accurate as he could possibly be, but yet Mormon apologists will argue that point. I've had Mormon apologists argue that point, and they'll claim that Joseph Smith actually got, you know, he got a lot of things really right, and it was astoundingly accurate. But it's ridiculous. You can't find a single Egyptologist in the world that would agree with that position. But yet they say it, and they say it with a straight look on their face, like, you know, don't call their bluff.
Indeed. And there's some things in the Pearl of Great Price, particularly the Book of Abraham, about Black Americans, which was changed quite conveniently in 1978. Would you like to address that, wherein African Americans could not have the priesthood, they could not participate in the temple, because they were somehow they were second class citizens, and this was in the Pearl of Great Price. And then, of course, Spencer W. Kimball changed it, because this was he changed it in 1978. Conveniently, he got a revelation, and I think it was also had something to do with the fact that the government was going to take away the 501c tax-exempt status of the church. And there were some other things. It was after the Civil Rights Movement in 1965, so... it's just crazy about some of the dogma that is in the Pearl of Great Price that is still accepted or has been changed. Correct?
Yeah. Well, one of the things in the Pearl of Great Price is the claim that our sun, the sun of our solar system, actually receives its power and energy from a star called Kolob. And Kolob is the star that is closest to where they believe God lives. And Mormons in the temple, and generally only in the temple, refer to God as Elohim, which isn't unusual. I mean, I think it's in Hebrew, the original word for God in the Bible is Elohim, which is kind of the my understanding is it's kind of the plural term for God. But Mormons refer to God as Elohim in the temple. Elohim lives on a planet closest to the star Kolob. And it also teaches that Black people were cursed with the mark of Cain. Now, I grew up in a church where essentially I was taught that Cain, which is one of Adam and Eve's children, Cain killed Abel. And because Cain killed Abel, he was cursed with black skin and would be forced to roam the earth for the rest of the eternities, essentially. So, and it just depends on which Mormon you ask. Mormon doctrine's funny in that some people, especially the younger people and a lot of the women, don't really know or understand some of the deeper Mormon doctrines. They kind of leave that to the men. So it's not uncommon for a Mormon woman, for example, to be oblivious to the fact that Joseph Smith practiced polygamy. But a vast majority, yeah, a lot of Mormon women think that was Brigham Young's thing. Brigham Young started that, but not Joseph Smith. Joseph Smith didn't marry little girls, but Brigham Young did.
I have a question from the from email, and it relates to this. So let me share it, and I'm going to add a word. What modern day apostle? What married modern day apostle had a different date for every night of the week? And he said the answer is Joseph Smith. Yes, you're right. Most people in the church do not know that Joseph Smith had at least 33 documented wives, many of which were 14 to 17. I think there were 11 that were teenagers. One was Helen Mark Kimball,
and nine of his first 12 wives, when he married them, were already married to other men.
Right.
And so, yeah, marrying other men, you know, what's fascinating is how many Mormons that do know that Joseph Smith married other men's wives and little girls, they stand firm very often in the belief that these were not sexual relationships. He wasn't having sex with them, which is just bizarre to me, because they don't they don't argue the fact that Brigham Young was having sex with his wives or John Taylor or any number of early Mormon apostles and prophets. They don't argue that at all. But for some reason, they feel like Joseph Smith having sexual relations with his wives is just, that's just going too far. That's a crazy, wild allegation. You have no evidence to prove this. You can't back that up. And it's like, well, but why? I don't get it. I don't understand why, like, it's almost as if they feel like if Joseph Smith is having sex with his polygamous wives, that would mean he's not a prophet?
Possibly. Okay, we're going to a quick 3-minute break. We'll be right back.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Extendivite, a 7-herb combination of garlic, cayenne, hawthorn, bilberry, ginkgo biloba, valerian, and milk thistle. Extendivite is designed to strengthen the heart and arteries and help the body heal itself. Doctors are not able to explain the improvements they are seeing in their patients' health who are taking Extendivite. People who once needed more pills are now taking less and getting better. Due to the unexplainable improvements in their patients' health, more doctors are calling to order Extendivite for themselves. Help Extendivite make your doctor a believer. Extendivite is available in capsule or liquid form for just $69.95 for a 2-month supply. To get started, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Hey, can we talk about something serious for a minute? Your age. Getting old has its perks. But remember, being a few years younger, you know, your hair was thicker, you didn't have so many wrinkles, that extra weight wasn't haunting you, and you just felt better. Well, we can't turn back the clocks and go back 10 or 15 years, but you can start feeling and looking 10 or 15 years younger with Nature's Youth RSF. It's a doctor-formulated daily supplement that helps your body maintain its peak performance and fight the aging process. Imagine sleeping better, looking better, and feeling better. See how Nature's Youth RSF has helped thousands of people just like you at naturesyouth.com. Naturesyouth.com. The holidays are coming. Imagine how it will feel when your family and friends are asking you what you did to look so good. Your secret will be Nature's Youth RSF. It's time to start looking better and feeling better. Learn more and order your Nature's Youth RSF at naturesyouth.com. That's naturesyouth.com.
Alrighty, welcome back. This is Deanna, and we were talking about Joseph Smith and his polygamy. And I believe it was Eliza R. Snow said that when people said, questioned whether he was having sex with his wives, she said, well, they don't know Joseph very well, those who said that he wasn't. And the fact is that the section 132 talks about polygamy, talks about plural marriage, and it states that that you have to get your first wife's permission. And many of the women that he married, his Emma Smith, knew nothing about. And I think she feared for her life at some point. And so anyway, that when I read that, I think that that was the straw that really broke me as far as being a Mormon. I was just flabbergasted that. And when he married Helen Mark Kimball, he gave her 24 hours. Her father was actually told her, asked her. He said, well, Joseph Smith came to me. He wants to have you for a wife. And he's made all these promises that the entire family would be guaranteed salvation. And she had 24 hours to decide. And there were other times when he would say, tell a prospective wife that there were angels ready to kill him if this woman did not say yes to become his wife. It was just coercion, and he was just a piece of garbage. I never thought I'd ever say that about him, but that's what I think. So, Mike, are you there?
Oh, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
So Joseph Smith claimed that an angel of God appeared to him and threatened his life with a flaming sword and told him that if he didn't practice polygamy, he would be killed. In fact, this is an actual quote from an essay that the church posted, and it's on the church's website where they let me just read this. It says, this is from the LDS Church's website. When God commands a difficult task, he sometimes sends additional messengers to encourage his people to obey. Consistent with this pattern, Joseph told associates that an angel appeared to him three times between 1834 and 1842 and commanded him to proceed with plural marriage when he hesitated to move forward. During the third and final appearance, the angel came with a drawn sword, threatening Joseph with destruction unless he went forward and obeyed the commandment fully. And fragmentary evidence suggests that Joseph Smith acted on the angel's first command by marrying a plural wife, Fanny Alger, in Kirtland, Ohio, in the mid-1830s. I believe Fanny Alger at the time was 16 years old.
Right.
And, you know, this essay from the church essentially admits that some, it doesn't say all of them, but it does admit that some of the relationships were sexual in nature. It admits some are 14 years old.
Wow. All righty, let's pick this up on the other side of the break. We're at the top of the hour. That's interesting. Very interesting. Be right back.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner.
owner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2 keep it today.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.